Board meeting is of August 14, 2008. Doris Amos is not here today, and I will be chairing the meeting. So let's do pledge allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Since we have a few people that want to do public comment, and we have a few people that have other places to go after this meeting, so I'll call them up. Florence, do you want to go first, please?
I'm Florence Wetlaufer, Secretary Treasurer of the Elk Rapids Area Historical Society, and I want to take this opportunity to thank the Board of Trustees for their willingness to cooperate and collaborate with us in applying for the 2% funding, revenue funding from the Grand Traverse Band of Ottawa and Chippewa Indians. As we all know, we were very successful in receiving that grant, and the materials have already been ordered. We're just waiting information about installation. This is a project for the kitchen workstation, which will benefit elementary school students as they come and visit through the year and work on historically related hands-on activities, and will benefit students for years to come. So thank you so much for your willingness to work with us on this, and consider this our invoice. I know that you have us on the agenda for payment, so this is the invoice for...
Give that to Shelley.
Thanks, Paul.
And I will assume that the check will be in the mail. Thank you.
I've got a question.
Yes, sir.
Who's going to show up for the press conference to collect the money?
We already had it on the 27th of July. Mike Shemansky represented. Yes. Yes, yes. And Dan LeBlanc and myself were there also. It was a very nice ceremony, and they do things right there, that's for sure.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Glad to help you, Florence.
Thank you.
Judge Hayes?
Good morning, and thank you very much for allowing me to speak kind of quickly here. I'll try and stay within 3 minutes, but I warn you, I'm not only a politician, but a lawyer.
Oh, okay.
So, as you well know, any lawyer that could be limited to 3 minutes, I don't know if they can divide their bill like that. So I'll try and speed it up. But I'm your probate court judge, and it's really been an honor and a privilege to serve as your probate court judge. And a lot of times I have people ask me what kind of cases I hear. They think automatically, well, wills and estates, and certainly that's part of it. But I'm also the chief or the presiding judge of the family division for circuit court. And I hear a lot of different cases, and what I'd like to tell you is a little brief fictitious story that will kind of outline the types of cases that I hear, and I hear them on a weekly basis. Let's say there's a little infant born, we'll call her Cheryl, and she's left at the Elk Rapids Fire Department, as they can do. A newborn, you can leave it there safely and not be in trouble. So a newborn is left there, Cheryl's left there, and a neglect case has to be filed. Well, I hear that neglect case. Cheryl is under the care of the court and the family division, and then becomes adopted. Well, I hear the adoption, which is, quite frankly, the best part of my job. So I hear the adoption for Cheryl. Well, things go along smoothly, but then Cheryl, at the age of 13, 14, decides to go into the village market and steal some property. Well, that's a delinquency case. I hear that case. Then Cheryl graduates from high school. She meets a guy and decides to get married. Well, I can do the wedding, too, if they want. Not only that, I can also do the divorce, which, by the way, is divorce day today for me in Bel Air, so I'm going to hear about 20 divorces. But she gets married. Now she has a problem, though, with her new husband's ex-wife, and that the ex-wife has assaulted Cheryl, so Cheryl has to come in and get a personal protection order, PPO. Well, I do that too. And then, of course, the ex-wife still bothers Cheryl, and so they have a hearing. I get to hear that too. So Cheryl decides marriage really wasn't everything for her. She gets a divorce, and the custody issue arises because they had a child. I hear that too. Now, as Cheryl gets older and her parents get older, they need some help because they can't control their finances. They're mentally, perhaps their cognitive abilities are declining. So she comes into court to get a conservatorship to handle their assets. I hear that too. She also needs to get a guardianship because they didn't really do a durable power of attorney for medical purposes. So they come in and ask for a guardianship, or she does, for her parents. I hear that too. Then unfortunately, obviously her parents pass on and she has to open an estate. There we go. There's my probate estate. Those are the types of cases I hear. And actually there's a mental illness petition too that could have been filed against Cheryl because she married a guy that had an ex-wife that beat her up all the time. But there's a mental petition there, and I hear that too. So those are the types of cases I hear. I think I might have gone over 3 minutes. I hope not. But it's a lot more than just estates and wills, that sort of thing. But if you ever have a question about probate court or about me, just give me a call. And I really appreciate the opportunity to present my case to you.
Okay. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you. Good seeing you, Bill.
Do we have anybody else for public comment?
No. Nope.
Nope.
Wait a minute.
Wait a minute, Joe.
Oh.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
I do.
My name is William Spencer, 8312 North Bay Shore, Elk Rapids. And I'm here to talk about the TARC Trail and the proposal to have it shared with North Bay Shore. And on there you'll find a map, the signatures of people on North Bay Shore that are against the TARC Trail on North Bay Shore. There's a map in here that shows the route that they're taking. Also, we have in here by Nancy Baker some of her thoughts on the TARC Trail. And she points out that injuries to cyclists are 28% more frequent on segregated paths. 72% of bike car fatalities happen on shared roadways. The presence of shorts, it's likely that North Bay Shore Leg will be viewed as brew trail. And I might also point out that the little further south where you can buy the groceries and things with the brewery or whatever it's called.
Shorts.
I don't drink.
Shorts?
Shorts, no, shorts down. Oh. Down the road. So, Altonins. They now have Altonins. They have single serve size drinks that you can take with you. And that could also increase the amount of bicycle riding and drinking. Let's see, the TARC Trail people encourage and celebrate alcohol biking relationship as a positive economic recreational marriage. On its website, it features the owners of Mobby, who states, "We have seen a dramatic increase of sales to cyclists." Other vineyard owners tout recently the trails have helped to create wine tasting bike groups. Access to these vineyards has been segregated trails, not shared roadway situations. And North Bay Shore would be a shared roadway. and it is illegal to bike while intoxicated. Bike accident rates are up 12% in the U.S. Alcohol factor and 37% of biker car crashes. Car bike fatalities, the cyclist is twice as likely to be intoxicated as the driver of the car. TART likes to springboard off the trails to create secondary events utilizing those trails. Look at their website for a list of upcoming events, including large group rides and runs. And would North Bayshore potentially be part of such an event? And therefore, we expect to close, and therefore expect to close as it does on Arbor Day Run? TART often encourages people to park and cycle. Where do they propose cyclists park their vehicles for the Elk Rapids portion if they just want to ride the Elk Rapids portion? How would we share the roadway? How would the shared roadway be marked to designate so users would be safely kept to the shoulder areas? One of TART's key messages is be safe and be seen. How will the trail accomplish that on a road of hidden driveways? If there are issues with cyclist accidents, trespassing, littering, drunk driving behavior, North Bayshore will not be policed by nearby village offices, but assistance would have to come from Bel Air 20 miles away. TART will probably state that property values on North Bayshore will increase. There is no study to substantiate this. All studies show enhanced property values are studies that involve segregated bike trails near or adjacent to private land. No studies have been undertaken regarding to shared roadway and hindrance to driveways. Elk Rapids will probably experience a positive economic impact from TART, but will that happen on designated trail? Just as it would be on shared roadway. We are stating that this presence of cyclists on segregated trail is a negative, just a shared road. And that's basically all that is on that. My personal feelings are is that, living on North Bayshore, that North Bayshore is a busy road. There are joggers from the high school. There are walkers. There are people with baby buggies. There are bicyclists. And the road is quite busy. And to use it now to have it a part of a TART trail, which would increase the amount of traffic on that road, would be dangerous. Those are my feelings. You'll also note that there is nothing on this petition that says we are against a TART trail, just North Bayshore because it would be dangerous. And I don't know, I have a question. When it comes down to designating this as part of the TART trail, does this board have any power over that?
No. What I suggest is the TART trail has the suggested routes. They're going to go over this. I believe there's a meeting August 22nd at the harbor.
Yes, August 22nd. We went to the meeting that was for the property owners on North Bayshore. There was nobody from the TART trail at this meeting.
Well, there will be somebody at the TART trail. Well, in August.
And, so, and will they take questions?
They should. I can't answer that because
I know. But at the meeting that we had for the people that lived on North Bayshore, we went to the meeting. They had a woman She gave her the presentation for the TART Trail. And when we asked questions, well, this meeting was for your information, not for you to ask any questions. I did get some more signatures at the meeting, so it was not a waste. So it turned out to be, here, this is where the trail's going. There used to be three routes on North Bay Shore. And that went up North Bay Shore or up 31. And they've taken the two alternates off. And there are no alternates for that section of the trail.
So, well, like I suggested, is to be there at that August 22nd meeting with your petitions. As far as I know, the MDOT and other powers to be will decide where the trail is going to be, I think. I mean, I don't think we have a say where it's going to go.
You might want to mention that last year, last fall, we voted to stay out of that.
Right. The township board voted to stay out of the funding of this TART Trail. It's also a mind fact that the county doesn't approve of it either, so.
The county does not approve it either?
As far as I know, they don't.
Good. I've already presented them with the petitions.
Okay.
They didn't want to.
I have a question of the 49 signatures I count here.
Yeah.
Covering the distance of whatever you say, 2.5 miles.
Yeah.
How many people populate that area?
I don't know exactly how many
300
people.
300 and you've got 49?
I've got 49. There are a large segment of rentals on the area towards town. I had one guy that said, he said, my property taxes shouldn't be so high because this is commercial. I don't know what he meant by that, but.
No comment, I don't do that.
Yeah, and I'll tell you how many people said no. Out of all these homes I went to, I had three people say no because we're bicyclists. This road should be just for bicyclists, one said. Don't know how you can get up and down the road then, but I had three say no because they were bicyclists. And I had several that said they weren't sure, they wanted to wait for the meeting. We had the meeting and right after all those people signed.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Sam Castronovo. I live on 6535 Timber Lake Drive in Elk Rapids Township. I have a couple items. One is the library. I'm hearing rumors that the village may vote on whether that change takes to the library, the reconstruction or addition.
Expansion.
And what I don't know if that's true or not, but at any rate, Milton Township, Elk Rapids Township, both pay taxes to support that library. And we should have a say on what goes on there. Or we should curtail our taxes. And maybe there should be a referendum reducing the taxes, because apparently they have more money than they need, because they're claiming that it will not take any increase in millage to support that library. So the question is, what's happening with the millage now if they're not going to need any in the future? So that's just a comment for you people. The other thing is, the Maple Harbor sewer is using the sewer that was paid for by Birch Lake residents. And I've made a comment before, I sent the email to Dorrance saying that those people should pay a part of the current cost of that sewer, because we're having an increase in our sewer rate based on current cost to maintain. There's no reason they should get into that sewer for no cost whatsoever. That's something else for the board to consider.
Mr. Castronovo, what
yes.
sewer increase are you speaking of?
Pardon?
What sewer increase are you speaking of?
Oh, increase. Our rate went from $25 to $50. I had to pay $4,000 to have my pump replaced recently. Forget that, because that's a legal issue. But we paid for the sewer that goes from Birch Lake to the treatment plant when it was built. Maple Harbor people are getting into that sewer at no additional cost to them for the cost of the construction of that sewer from Birch Lake to the treatment plant. That's not fair. That's not fair.
Okay.
They should be paying a portion of the original, not the original cost, but the current day cost of what it would cost to build that sewer, because to maintain it or replace it, it's going to be current day cost. And they're paying nothing. They're not paying 1 cent for the cost of that sewer. And I sent an email to Dorrance on that.
Okay.
I think the board should take that into consideration. I do have a question on this solar energy. Where is that going to be? Is that just a...
We have
you have no idea. Okay.
That's okay. The next presentation.
That's the next
okay.
presentation.
I would like to say that studies have shown that while you would think 2 out of 3 days is overcast in Michigan, that solar would not be a good idea. The studies have shown that solar is more efficient than wind. When I came up from Lansing yesterday, all those windmills were dead in the water. I mean, they were not turning at all. So, I write letters to the editor periodically, locally and in Traverse City. I have one in there you might want to read today concerning Hanoi Jane. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anybody else? Okay, we have a presentation from Geronimo Energy.
Good morning, board and trustees. My name is Dave Shiflett with Geronimo Energy. I'm the Michigan project manager. I'm a resident of Leelanau County, past four-term county commissioner over there. I handle all of the on-the-ground work for Geronimo here in the state of Michigan. This is my associate, Kara Bakke. Kara is our permitting specialist. And just to assuage any fears, we don't have any sites yet in your community, so we're just starting to explore. This is an educational opportunity. I've met Mr. Dorrance. We also work with your township attorney. We utilize Varnum across the state, and they suggested that this be a good educational opportunity as solar is being deployed across the state. It's a way to get out in front of it early on. So thank you very much for entertaining us this morning, and I'll turn over the presentation to Kara, and I'll run the machine.
The lights turned off, Kara?
Oh, yeah.
Yep, three over there.
All right, good morning, board, trustee. Oh, looks like we don't. Where did our trustees go?
Yeah.
Oh, hopped over there. There we go. I'm like, I just saw you. All right, so just real briefly, I've done this presentation and had it last over a half hour. I have my condensed version. I can get it down. 5 minutes was a real quick one, so I'll try to be mindful of everyone's time and then allow the opportunity for questions if we have specifics. And hopefully we'll be able to be back in front of you in the future when we can delve into things in a little bit more detail. Next slide, please, David. A little bit about Geronimo Energy before we get too far into things. We are a utility scale wind and solar development company. A company started in wind, added solar to the mix probably about 6 years ago. We're tracking pretty closely to have an even split between 50-50 in terms of assets and development with the company. We currently have 1,800 megawatts of wind and solar that are in operation or under construction, a 3,000 megawatt pipeline. In Michigan, David and I have been working on projects really central, south, eastern, southwestern part of the state is primarily where we've been focused. We have about a little over 150 megawatts going there. Solar in Michigan, what is driving it? There is a renewable portfolio standard for the state. Also, the utilities here are pushing and calling for renewables on their own. Consumers just put out their draft resource plan, and it's calling for 5,000 megawatts of solar alone, about 500 so of wind, and that one is just to help them hit the state standard. The solar is really going to be integrated across the long-term goal to hit that. It's about 43%, just shy of 50, that they're calling for renewables by 2040. In addition, there's lots of other drivers going on. Also just the economics and efficiency of solar itself. The cost has come down, the equipment and the efficiency has gone up, and As the gentleman before was saying, the resource is good here. Even on the cloudy days, the sun is still shining and that irradiance is still coming through and those panels are still producing power. I'll leave that. We have some copies of the presentation. We just like to take little excerpts of where solar can help align with drivers right now of Elk Rapids master township plans and goals. David, you want to just hop through those? Get more to the juicy solar stuff. Not all the text. Well, we want to look at pictures. All right, so pre-construction activities. This is kind of what goes into a lot of the siting of a facility and concurrently with when we would start to come before a board and seek a permit for a project. First, you're looking at interconnection. So you have to have a facility that is near utilities equipment, whether that be a distribution line, transmission line, a substation, depending on the size of your project. You also need to be in their service territory and near their equipment. And then after that, you're starting to look at land. Ideally, we want land that's flat. The flatter, the better, the less disturbance that has to go into it when you have that nice flat land. Also supportive soil structure as well. As soon as you need a landowner that wants to work with you too, as soon as you have all those checked and you start rolling, then you're going to start looking at more detailed studies, looking at drainage, looking at hydrology, performing cultural and resource surveys, looking at your wetlands, starting to work with the DEQ. Do you have any regulated wetlands within that project footprint or not? Species review, what do we have to be concerned about in the vicinity of the project? Has there been anything marked on the project and tagged? And then also, contamination. Believe it or not, and that's the piece I have to deal with more than not. I had a project in Minnesota where we did all of our due diligence work, then we got it out there and started digging and we just found a bunch of garbage. So that was not a fun one. You don't like those surprises mid construction. You try to do your due diligence work so you don't have that situation happen, but it happens and you deal with it. So anyways, that's another piece that we look at. And if the land needs some restoration or cleanup, because of the financing hoops that we have to jump through, we have to clean it up and take care of it. Another huge piece to these projects is zoning. A lot of townships in Michigan, as David and I have been moving throughout the state, don't have solar ordinances. We are excited when there's a place that we haven't came to yet for development, and they've either reached out to us just because of our presence and being known in the state to kind of help have that education piece to get zoning established. It's great to get it. It's great to get ahead of it. It's solar is certainly coming to Michigan, and having a good strong ordinance in place it's wonderful, and it'll be a great tool for you. So there's not the pressure of the developers there saying, "I want to permit this project. You don't have anything. Go, go, go." And then you have something you're comfortable with. It's there. Key stakeholder engagement, community support. That's a lot of what David does throughout the state. There's numerous agencies and other government entities, local parks, supports group that can certainly benefit from our projects. And if you have questions about that, talk to him. We'll leave it at that. And then commercial offtaker. That is probably also one of the biggest pieces to these projects. You need to have someone to sell the power to. So here we have, I'm going to use this picture of the solar facility as our little guide. So inverters. Inverters are the brains of the operation. It's that little white box. So your solar project is running on DC, our grid runs on AC. So those inverters convert from DC to AC. Modules and panels are the largest number count of a project. Right here we're looking at a tracker system. Trackers are going to be if the rows align northwest, and they track very slowly east-west with the sun throughout the day. It is so slow, it would be like watching paint dry if you were to stand out there and try to see them move. That is how gradual it goes throughout the day. But they just follow the sun. The other system is fixed tilt. Those ones typically face southerly, and the rows run east-west. Very, very similar, only one tracks, one doesn't. Your racking is what is supporting all of those solar panels. Access roads are a key piece of the facility. The utilities want to be able to get to the equipment, get to the inverters, get to the point of interconnection, those types of things. We also need to be able to, you know, get through the facility. Typically, you'll have access, actual gravel access roads running to the inverters. We do not have access roads that run all the way through the different arrays of panels. You just have to have enough spacing that you could have a light pickup truck drive through those. Electrical components. Most of the electrical cables and all that within the facilities came contained. The wiring with between the panels themselves is often clipped behind the panels. And then from there, they run and they're buried to the inverter. Then from the inverter, those cables are buried to the point of interconnection. The point of interconnection is determined by the utility. Depends on the size of your project, depends on the utility. It could be some utility poles that hook up into their existing distribution grid. It could be an inverter. We never get to decide what that point of interconnection looks like. They just tell us, and that's what it is. Security fencing. We are held to National Electric Code for these types of facilities. And right now, National Electric Code is amended on a regular basis. But right now, those standards are you either have to have a 6-foot chain link fence with 1 foot of barbed wire, 3 strands, or a 7-foot fence or higher. What we've been looking at in Michigan for guidance from the DNR is an 8-foot ag fence to help keep deer out of the facility. Some can still jump an 8-foot fence, but most are deterred from that. So that is what we are looking at employing for our Michigan projects to keep up with electric code. Stormwater retention areas, that's another big piece to these. You are going to have to adhere to the state standards for stormwater control during construction and then for the operational life of the project. What we see in the long term with our projects is that drainage improves and runoff decreases, because you're often going from land that has a tillable cover crop to something with permanent vegetation once that vegetation is established. So having that cover annually, you're having the increase in infiltration. Operation and maintenance shed, sometimes you'll have a little shed on there. I will talk about panel height really quickly, and I think we have a picture later on there that kind of shows in a minute so you can get a good idea for sizing. The panels typically, they average right around between 10 and 12. Sometimes they can get up to upwards of 15. When that ends up happening, that's usually topography constraints. So we're trying to minimize grading. You may not grade an area, might have something a little bit higher. When you're doing those drainage studies, if you find out a certain area of the site is prone to, in a back-to-back 100 flood event, is going to hold 3 feet of water, you have to design your system so your solar panels aren't going for a swim. So that's when you see that higher variation in height. Typical vegetation management, good segue for talking about the drainage on the site. Geronimo likes to establish a native prairie mix throughout our sites. You're going to have 3 different types of mixes depending on site conditions. Within the array area, a shorter mix, and that's just to help minimize and avoid shading on the panels. In the space between the array blocks and the fencing, taller prairie plantings. And then in those wet areas, you're going to want to have a mix that will thrive in wet conditions. So for your stormwater retention areas, some type of more of a wetland, wet prairie seed mix there. And our mixes not only promote pollinator habitat, butterflies, bees, and they. We are also looking at ones in Michigan for grazers. So the grazers wouldn't be able to come in until about the third year, because you would need the vegetation to be well established. Otherwise, it wouldn't work. But that is another way that these facilities can promote agriculture throughout the life of them. Yeah.
I want to back up and just kind of point out, especially for this area here where pollination is the lifeblood of our fruit industry. There are studies that have been done at Michigan State University and elsewhere with Dr. Rufus Isaacs that by having pollinator habitat and large portions of it, it actually increases yield of the surrounding agricultural areas. And as more insects are being listed as endangered species, we anticipate Fish and Wildlife creating management plans that by having large tracts of pollinator habitat available to your community, the local farmers are not going to have to comply with potential management, or not have to put in a potential management plan. That's something that we kind of see maybe coming down the road in the future.
All right. What's grazers?
Oh, rabbits. Yep, sheep. So we'd be looking at sheep. Yeah, sheep and lambs, because goats are a little too wild for a solar facility, and horses aren't as graceful either. But
picky eaters.
Yeah, and picky eaters. But sheep are, they're perfect, and you know, you would, what we would envision and what we're starting to see in Minnesota. In Minnesota, our solar market has boosted, and there's a bunch of systems operational and installed, and also employing similar models as this. Where you know you would have a farmer that has the sheep, and you know he would come through and you know just move through the facility, take them off when he's done. Not they're not necessarily living there permanently. They're just coming in to eat, and they leave when they're done.
Buffet.
Yep, exactly. Buffet style.
That's right.
Yep.
It creates a high value added agricultural product to the community. Michigan has a very large Islamic population that. Right now, we have one of our landlords in another project. He sells every live lamb he can produce in the metro Detroit area to serve their religious ceremonies.
Next slide. All right, so key parts of a solar facility construction, and then we'll just get to pictures and can flip. So site prep. Site prep is, if you do have to do grading, it's your grubbing. It's just getting the facility prepped for the equipment install, putting in your stormwater retention ponds and your BMPs so you can properly manage stormwater during construction, marking up the site. Pure installation, that is certainly the noisiest part of the construction. We won't lie to you about that, but it's also the quickest. That one is those beams. To date, in the Midwest, we've installed over 200 megawatts of solar, and we have not had to use any concrete with those. So they're just they're vibrated, pile driven into the ground at the depth that's required based on their geotechnical studies, and they're good. They're good to go. After that piece, and for a one megawatt facility, you can run through that in about 2 weeks, and to give you some size and conception of what is a 1 megawatt facility. That is on about 10 acres of land. 1 megawatt of solar can sustain the average annual electricity usage of about 200 homes annually.
To give you a local reference, in Traverse City, on 72 West at Blue Bay Road, it's right at the base of Leon County, Great Travis County, where the wind turbine is. They just installed a 1 megawatt project there. So they give you the size of. Mm-hmm. And those are fixed tilt. This is an example of a fixed tilt array.
Mm-hmm. Yep, thank you, David.
Construction season starts usually when frost laws are off in the spring. We deploy, it goes through the site prep, and then usually these projects are they're pretty quick. It's less than the growing season. Usually by the time construction and panel installation and all of that is done. And during construction, the panel installation and the racking installation is very labor intensive. So there's a lot of construction jobs that are created for a short period of time, anywhere from 100, around 100 people in the community working on these during construction on the utility scale size.
Yep, and it's just, David said, you're racking a module. That's the most labor-intensive part. That's also the part that takes the longest in terms of when the construction workers are out there. And interconnection, that's once you have all of the modules in, that's when you're, stringing your wires behind the panels, digging the trenches to get you to the inverters, the trenches to the point of interconnection. Revegetation, once the construction workers are off the site, revegetation is actually the longest. To get a native prairie established, it's really hard. I'm working on doing that on about 20 plus sites in Minnesota right now. And that can take 2 to 3 years before it really looks like when I say native prairie, what you would picture in your head. For the first 2 to 3 years, we're really doing a lot of mowing, controlling for weeds, because in those first 2 to 3 years, native plants are building roots instead of popping up. So you're having to continuously plant, a winter wheat or oats and, cover crops to help give you that foliage and coverage other than just weeds. And then after that, about that 3-year mark, then we're going to start to having the prairie bloomings. And then for the rest of it, it's just pictures. David, you can just kind of flip through these.
For example, fixed tilt versus tracking. Obviously, on the right-hand side, the vegetation has not established yet. Here's what it looks like during pile installation. Racking build-out. As you can see, there is a slight grade change in some topography we can live with. More of the racking. And that all the racking installation is all done by hand. And here's an indication of the size of panels in relationship to humans.
And I'm on the far left. So I'm a little over 5'8". And that's a fixed tilt system, too.
Construction delivery is typically done with light semis. There's not a lot of heavy equipment. There's no big heavy trucks like such as concrete trucks in the wind industry. So roads are left the way they're found. There really is very little to no impact on local roads. So that's nothing really to be concerned about. There's a couple different types of technology for panels today. Thin film and then polycrystalline. It just depends on what technology we choose to go with at the time and the cost of the technology.
What's available.
What's available. Procurement. And just so for people in the audience, because it's a question we always get, panels are manufactured all over the globe these days. In fact, the Thin Film, there's a company here in the U.S. called First Solar. They just broke ground earlier this summer in Dayton, Ohio. They were a windshield manufacturing firm that converted to creating solar panels. They just broke ground on the largest solar panel manufacturing facility in the Western Hemisphere. We do a lot of business with First Solar, so people get concerned. They hear the news about the Chinese tariffs and things like that. It's not as impactful as one might think. It's a much longer conversation to go into, but happy to carry on after this presentation. Once again, the racking installation.
We're happy to take questions as David continues to put through these pictures.
This is an example of a tracking system that has been revegetated. Here's examples of the inverters. They can either be exposed on the right-hand side or enclosed on the left-hand side. And quite often these are now coming in on preformed concrete slabs as opposed to pure construction. One of the trends in the industry is once a life cycle of a project's 30 to 35 years, we can't see that far into the future, but returning this to existing or to a pre-existing use, such as agriculture, it's very easy to do so. All the equipment gets pulled out of the ground, gets recycled. There's a big market for recycling solar panels now. And then just detail this, and it's right back into agriculture. And actually, the soil is improved because it's been vegetated for the last 30 years, fallow and all that biological matter is going back into the ground. It's not a big issue up here because all of our orchards have vegetation, but elsewhere, the state where there's corn and soybeans and things like that, where they have a monoculture of agricultural practice, it really does help soil conditions long term. This is an example of a larger project. This is actually over in Sarnia, Ontario. It's a 25-acre solar farm, so you can kind of get an idea of post-construction, what that appears to have about 75 to 100 foot setbacks there. It's hard to say. And then an example of the security fencing. And there's our contact information.
So if you were to have an ice storm or a hail storm?
Panels are designed to take up to a 2-inch hail stone. Before they break, they're much like the panels are much like an iPad. They're more durable, actually durable than an iPad. They, like a windshield, they don't shatter and spray all over the place. They're designed to, because they've got laminate in there. We just, like anything, if you break a light bulb, you replace it. So depending on what kind of damage there would be, we'd go back and they're insured, obviously. Mm-hmm. They just get replaced and unplugged in.
It just seems odd that you have all that, it looks like glass, out just waiting.
And to also one of the things that we keep hearing about is glare. The panels are actually designed to absorb the light as opposed to reflect it. So glare is not an issue for these. In fact, there's big installations taking place right now at Denver International Airport, Indianapolis Airport. So they're in the FAA. We have to do one, it's one of the other things we have to do.
Well, right, David, let me take that before you start saying stuff that's not right. So when it comes to those regulations. Yeah. So when you do, if glare is of concern, it has to do with your angle of inclination. So typically, if you're within 2 miles of an airport, you're going to perform a glare study because you are in and around an approach zone for an airplane. And if you're within that 2 mile radius, then you certainly are filing with the FAA. And sometimes you can be slightly further out and required to file with the FAA, and that is which I think most people don't probably know about it, but if you're just putting in a structure, you should always check on their website and put in your coordinates, put in your structure height, and the FAA will tell you if you have to file, because you could even have to file for fence installations, and that's something I didn't know about until I got into this job. But, you know, so basically if the FAA tells us to file, we're going to file. Sometimes you can be within 2 miles of an airport, and you may not be in approach zone, but for us, we just prefer to file anyways as good practice and good due diligence. So that is when you're going to work with them for those studies.
A couple questions. Mm-hmm. How does the...
Sure.
Yeah. So you have to run electricity both ways. How do the panels rotate?
They have a little motor. Kind
so
of.
You got electricity going both directions.
Kind of a little motor.
You have to feed that. The other question is the weed control. You know, there's a big problem right now, at least with my phone, with the home weed control. Mm-hmm. What do you use, and how do you protect and won't be any water contamination?
Sure.
Are you spraying it, or what are you doing?
Well, so typically, it depends on the weed. Some weeds can just be mowed. Some do need to be sprayed. I can guarantee that the amount of application is a lot less than existing aggies that most of the land is already experiencing.
That won't matter to the environmental. I'm just telling you, it won't matter to the environmental. The other question I have, how do you keep them clean? Obviously, if they get dirty, they become less efficient.
There's enough precipitation here that we don't anticipate needing to do any panel washing.
Efficiency because of their accumulation on the panels.
Like I said, there's enough precipitation in this part of the state that in the Midwest that we haven't had to wash any of our operating facilities. And similar to that with snow, if most of the installations that are going in, and at least that Geronimo is looking at installing, we would utilize a tracker, and a tracker is going to shed snow.
The other question is, have you considered putting in specific type of vegetation such as milkweed?
Yep.
Chelsea,
absolutely. That's
butterfly mature.
Yep. That and yep. Our mixes, they promote butterfly and pollinator habitat.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
What's the cost for a megawatt, a 10-acre installation for construction? Just a rough number.
Let's see. I would say, well, and the market here may be a little bit different. But roughly speaking, I'm working on a build-out portfolio right now of 16 singular 1 megawatt facilities, and it's about $1 million per megawatt of construction cost, module procurement, the whole package.
Not including the land. What's the annual maintenance cost of that 1 megawatt?
That I don't have for you.
Frankly, I don't know how to work on the operations side, mm-hmm. but I can find out for you what that
just
is. I don't work on the operations side, but I'm happy to get that.
Not a big deal. Just a question.
For example, the total capital investment for a 20 megawatt project here in Michigan is about $69 million, somewhere around $67 million. And those costs are coming down. As panel prices have dropped about 80% over the last 8 years. And continue to do so. That's one of the reasons why here in Michigan, solar energy has become so competitive with traditional fossil fuel sources.
Another question: you're the owner of Geronimo is the owner. Do they contract it out? Do they subcontract it? Are they their own contractors?
Sure.
Local contractors? Do they do the whole
Sure, let me back up a little bit more. So Geronimo Energy, we develop our projects and we aim to own and operate the projects. We like them. Sometimes utilities will end up getting to buy their way and buying the projects. That will happen. But our goal is to own and operate. Our team as a whole, we have a construction team that oversees an engineering procurement contractor. The engineering procurement contractor would be a company within the state, and they would be the ones that would be responsible for procuring we typically procure our own panels, but otherwise we leave the EPC to procure the rest of the equipment for the facility, as well as the construction workers. And usually what we see, because it's more cost effective for them, is they will put out requests for proposal for work in those local neighborhoods where those installations are going in. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for your time.
Okay, moving along with the approval of the meeting agenda.
I'm going to let Dick get replaced here.
Okay. The approval of the meeting agenda, is there any changes? I like to make one change, that we take number 12 off. We already did the Historical Society thing.
All right.
Are there any other changes? Do I have a motion to accept the meeting agenda as adjusted?
I move to accept as adjusted.
Second?
Did you second it?
Yes.
You're asking for second?
No, I'm seconding it. Okay, you all set, Shelley?
Almost.
Okay, the consent agenda.
Wait a minute. Whoop. We'll vote.
We got to do a roll call vote?
No, just a vote.
Oh. All those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion's
Thanks.
Passed. Consent agenda. The July 10th meeting minutes, zoning report, treasurer's report, and the investment of Michigan class investment policy that's in the investment report, and the paying of the bills.
I move to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. Do we need a roll call vote on this?
Yep.
Yes, roll call vote.
Okay, roll call. Halts?
Yes.
Shemansky?
Yes.
Boisvert, yes.
And noted that Dorrance and Aaron Eisenhardt are absent.
Right.
Moving on to budget amendments and adjustments. Shelley, you want to?
I'll just move to, this is just straightening out our budgets right now, and the amendment was to take care of some additional assessing field work. So I'll move to approve the budget amendments and adjustments.
Okay, I'll second.
Probably roll call vote on that. Roll call Shemansky?
Yes.
Boisvert, yes. Halts?
Yes.
Okay, sheriff and commission report. There's no sheriff, no commission. Bill, I'm just going to read this, that there was for the July end, Elk Rapids Township had 89 calls for service. Two of the big items were driving complaints 10, traffic stops 16. I will give the ambulance department report. for the village and township, there was 15 calls for service. And of that, there was 13 transports, 10 from the village and 3 from the township. It's like a very slow month, which is good. Moving on next to the fire chief's report, Pete.
Yeah, he's still here.
He's still here.
Thank goodness.
Why does this have to fall on my turn when I have to run these meetings?
Good morning. We responded to 11 incidents in July. Current staff's at 18. I'm asking for permission to hire Garrett Santella. Things are in good order next door, including all the equipment and apparatus. We had a very uneventful Harbor Days, and that was good. Everybody had a good time, too, as far as I know. In terms of our cost recovery ordinance, I've been in touch with Consumers Power about procedures for sending them invoices. I think I've got it. I think I understand it. We'll see once when the day comes when we send them the first bill. I've also talked with both the local police department and the sheriff's department about getting accidents reports in case we need them. I don't anticipate any issues. I mean, accident reports are public information, so just a matter of figuring it out. And by the way, this weekend, we had an incident where we created our first invoice, so we'll see how that all goes. So, work continues at our training center. It's coming along nicely. And Ken, do you remember the date? It's the first Sunday in October. I believe look it up on your phone. It's the 6th or 7th. Yeah. We'll have an open house out there. I'll give you 7th. October 7th, the first Sunday in October. Yep, we'll have an open house and dedication out there, and I'll give you some more information later on that. Michigan's a little bit the epicenter for the PFAS contamination in firefighting foam. We believe we have 30 gallons of that is likely contains that. We're in the process of removing that, putting it in storage until we can find a place to dispose of it legally. And we've ordered replacement foam for it. That's all I can say is we've been advised it likely contains it, so we're going to remove it and store it and dispose of it. End of that discussion. So, and we've got a class scheduled for this fall and winter. It's the Firefighter 1 class. It's the basic firefighting academy that the state says we have to run everybody through to get them certified, and that's going to happen right next door all winter long. So, any questions?
I have a question.
Yeah. It's approximately 175 hours. It's
okay.
That took care of that, didn't it? It's the class that meets the Office of Firefighter Training credentials and OSHA's credentials for a firefighter, and you have to be an employee of a fire department in order to attend. Or an explorer. There's an exception for, there's a Boy Scout group called Explorers, and there's a special exemption for them. So you either have to be a Boy Scout or a firefighter, or a Girl Scout. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Pete. We need a motion to hire Garrett Santella as a firefighter.
I'll make the motion to hire Garrett Santella per the recommendation of the chief.
Okay.
Second.
I have second. Motion and second. We need a roll call vote.
Nope.
No?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Pete, we've just hired him. HRSA report. Tom is here.
Good morning, Tom Branich with HRSA. And since the board does not meet in July, I don't have a HRSA report, but we've been working on a problem with our foundation. We discovered through inspection that we've got a lot of water coming off the west side of the building, off the roof, down into the foundation, causing damage. We did have some superficial repair work done last year down there in the back, and that's all been already been disintegrated, so we need to address this pretty soon here. We've sought bids for different work to address this, including a 106-foot seamless gutter on that side to drive water off that area, and part of that will go down into the storm sewer with the help of the village. They're going to build a bump out in the front of the building, and part of that work, they'll allow us to hook up our drain to their sewer at no cost, essentially. So today I'd just like to see if we could get approval to get some work done to prevent greater damage. We estimate it's going to be around $5,000 to shore up this problem. I just got one last bit of the puzzle this morning from our carpenter. So Dick has been working with me on this, and two other members of our building committee. So Dick has a list of items, but I'd like to today see if we could get this work lined up and get this taken care of before the winter. And we're happy to answer any questions.
I've got a breakdown of the list too that Tom refers to. I've been working and sort of compiling the stuff, playing, you know, general contractor here. The gutter work is quoted out at $1,250. The removal or trimming of the hedge system, there is a large arborvitae, I believe, hedge system between our property and the private individual to the west, is $630. The carpet number for the fascia work, there's disintegrated fascia and soffit on the upper part. Can't hang the gutters until that's repaired, is $1,900. I took a guess at installing a catch basin and picking up the gutter runoff from the building once the gutter's installed, that the DPW is going to provide with the curb cut, of $350. We don't have a painting bid to paint the stuff that we're going to fix at 20, whatever it is, 4 feet up there yet. We don't have a quote on the masonry that's already showing degradation. We do have a rough quote on a steel door that needs to be replaced on the west side, around $600. So far, we're up to about $5,000, and we haven't painted it or we haven't fixed the masonry. So $5,000 is going to be a little light, but Tom is requesting that from the board, I believe.
We show $3,000 in our budget for maintenance, but $6,000 for building reserve, which we were budgeting to set aside for the roof and the large maintenance items.
This will be a real large maintenance item if it stays this way for another year or two. No right. questions.
And I know that we've brought this up in previous meetings. I think it'll take another budget adjustment to.
Yeah, we'll have to move some money out of that reserve.
Yeah, I think this is one of these kind of things where it would warrant the moving of some of the reserve money to get ahead
just
of the problem.
Just to get this taken care of. Yeah. Okay. And like I said, we've discussed this in past meetings bit by bit. So if you guys have the stuff that you need, I'll make a motion to give the go-ahead to start the repairs necessary come fall, because once again, finding someone to do it is half the battle.
Yeah, it's been a lot of work just to get numbers for you.
Yeah. There's a bargain from DPW too, because they're going to do the curb cut. All we have to do is install the catch basin, which I'm going to go pick up from the supplier, and we'll find somebody to dig it in and set the grade. So we're saving substantially just on picking up that water and putting it back out into the street. It's not going to go into the sewer. It's going to go back to surface drain.
Yeah, surface drain. That's it. Yeah.
So there's a savings by operating on that one functional item, which has to be there once the building is gutted anyway. So there's a bunch of things that have to come into sequence.
Do you think $5,000 is going to do it?
No.
Don't tell the treasurer that.
Should we put a cap on this?
Yeah, I mean it's going to be 5 to 6. Depending on how much the painting costs are, because we're painting at 24 feet. which means you got to have lift equipment and so on and so forth.
All right, so if I change my motion to say we'll approve suggested maintenance items not to exceed $6,000 at this time.
Seems reasonable.
Would that be?
Yeah, I think that would be, would cover it.
That is my motion then. Sorry, okay. Now okay. I'm writing.
I'll second that.
We do need a roll call vote for this to spend money?
Yep. Roll call vote. Boisbert, yes. Halts?
Yes.
Szymanski?
Yes.
Motion approved.
Thank you.
Approved. Thank you, Tom.
And can I get a copy of your list just to keep with my
Dick has got
things? That. Well, when you, yeah. I'll make a copy.
Yeah. Yeah, I got a couple other things here you can make copies of, too.
Okay.
Okay, the Elk Rapids Township Planning and Zoning, we have to do some reappointments to the Planning Commission for another 3-year term. Dorrance has contacted these individuals, Gary Pepler and James Lundy, for a term is from August 2018 through August 2021. Bill, can we do these together or do we have to do them individually?
I do them individually. It's Planning Commission. You can do it together, that's fine.
Okay, but then, okay,
ZBA.
That's what I meant. There's, okay. Okay. So I need a motion for to reappoint Gary Pepler and James Lundy on the Planning Commission for another 3 years.
I move to appoint Pepler and Lundy for Planning Commission to August of 2021.
I will second. All those in favor?
Aye.
I say aye, opposed, nay. Bear with me, guys. I haven't done this in a while.
I know. That's you're doing good.
Okay, the next reappointment is to the ZBA for another 3 years. That's Julia Amos and Marshall Wright. Same time period, August 2018 through August of 2021.
I make the motion to approve the reappointments of those two.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Roll call vote. All those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
Not a roll call. Yeah.
No, I'm prepared. Just let Shelly catch up with the writing here.
Good.
Okay. Township Sewer, Maple Harbor Sewer Project Update. We have Brad over here from Performance Engineering.
So since our last meeting, I don't believe the contractor's been back out on site doing anything. The project's for the most part completed. There's just a small punch list left to do, and he was waiting to tie that in with a private residence that he's also doing, and he's had issues getting the pump for that because the manufacturer had a severe fire late spring, so production's been down. I talked to him this morning and he confirmed that pump was going to be shipped today, so he's hoping to be back in Elk Rapids tomorrow, finalizing small punch list items, and there's some miscellaneous pipe he's got to pick up, but it should be 100% through punch list tomorrow, my hope is.
Okay. Now the construction bill for $15,188.85, is this the...
This was him and I going through final numbers and change order and trying to clean up just the final billing. We did get one of the change orders. Him and I had some discussion and came to an agreement. There is still a couple other smaller items that him and I are just having some discussion, trying to kind of get firmed up.
Okay. So we need approval to pay the construction bill of $15,188.85 for the Maple Harbor Sewer Project.
I'll make the motion to approve the construction bill.
Second.
Seconded by Holtz.
Most of that bill was restoration, by the way.
Pardon?
Most of that bill was restoration.
Okay.
This is roll call?
Yes.
So roll call, Holtz?
Yes.
Szymanski?
Yes.
Boisvert, yes.
Okay, Brad, back to the township sewer maintenance update. No maintenance bills, I like that.
Yeah, we have nothing going on as far as the maintenance side of things. You know, the township, or I met with the village DPW last month, and we kind of went through and I just a little synopsis walkthrough of what Maple Harbor consisted of, and went through control panel operations, whatnot, and kind of got them up to speed. And they'll visit, do a site visit. I think they go out there a couple times a week, drive by, just kind of make sure everything's where it needs to be. But that's all part of your normal operations with the DPW. Nothing beyond that was done.
Okay.
I got a couple things, Mike. You're going to final this then in the next few days. It looks like you owe him about $12,000 to $13,000. You will then will put the final pay request in to close the contract?
Yes.
And at that time, does that indicate the warranty period starts when that final certificate is signed?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, according to your contract, the warranty yes. kicks in at the date of the final acceptance?
Correct.
Okay. The other question is, did you consider putting impact ballards in front of the pump station equipment?
No, that was not one of our considerations. You think for
do you
traffic?
Think it should be?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean
just a chance of impact from a car at that location. I mean I ride by there all the time and it
we got a power pole, I guess.
I mean a thought. It's one
yeah.
of those.
No, know. We didn't think of it. I guess any traffic that hit it or you know would come flying off the road. I don't know if a ballard would be enough. But it sure would help, I'm sure.
Yeah, because it would take it down, right? I mean, it would literally, once a car went through that, it would be down.
Yeah, yeah, right. At that point, we'd have to bring in standby generator, manual operate.
Right.
But I will say that that panel's what they call a pre-engineered line, even though it's the only manufacturer I found that produced a high quality panel like that with a lot of custom features that they make in a pre-engineered line, and they can get that panel probably in 2 or 3 days. If something took out, you know, we could get it replaced fairly quickly.
Just an observation my wife made as I rode by on a bike. I'm like, good point. Thank you.
Okay, the 2018 tax rate request form L4029. Okay, the millage rate set for the general fund is going to be 0.9673. That's based on the maximum allowable millage by the Headley Amendment. The millage rate for the township roads is 0.3428. Same thing, the maximum amount allowed by the Headley Amendment. The special for fire is still going to be 2.1 like it was last year. Do we need a vote?
You know, I guess it wouldn't hurt.
Okay, well, do you want a roll call or just a...
Well, I'll just make the motion to approve the amounts on the form and send it to the county treasurer.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Second.
Is that a roll call or just that's not spending money, that's me collecting money.
Right.
All those in favor say yes.
Aye.
Opposed, nay?
Aye.
Aye. Attorney's report.
Attorney's report for August. Just a side note on there's the first assessing meeting I've heard. As you're well aware, the state of Michigan is proposing changing the assessing rules for our assessors. There's a public meeting from 10 a.m. to noon today in Gaylord. The Department of Treasury is holding. I emailed this to, I know our assessor, but I think maybe she's going and Amy's maybe going.
They are, Dorrance and Carlene are That's where they're at this morning.
They have public comment on the assessing part of it. Sheriff's report had 59 events, as Mike reported. That's the lowest in 4 years. There has been low activity all over, I think, on this. Farmland open space, I reported last month, but I just wanted to reinforce that Milton is not going to go to the ballot in 2018 at the Grand Traverse Regional Land Conservancy request. They want more time to educate the people, the electors. Sportsman's Club, somewhere Mike's going to report township announcements.
Tires are gone.
Right, tires are gone. They've all been removed.
They're all laying on M-72. No, they're gone.
Yeah.
They're gone to 258 tire for recycling and grinding.
Planning Commission, the next Planning Commission meeting is September 11th, 6:30, and that will include the public hearing for the revised master plan at that time. Hayden, nothing new on that project. Phragmites, I believe there'll be a new, Dorrance will have the information, I think, coming up, but there'll be a new study of the bay and on inland lakes and recommendations where to spray for the Phragmites. Hertha, we've heard the report. ZBA, nothing new to report on that. Birch Lake Sewer, you've heard from Brad and Maple Harbor. And medical marijuana, just to reinforce, I haven't been reporting on it because it's going to be on the ballot in November, and we'll all see what happens. Cemetery, I happened to be talking to Dean Ferrier towards the end of last month on another matter, and I asked him, how do I locate the point beside the antique shop? And he said he was volunteering. He said, we're in the area long enough, often enough, that he'll put a 3-foot post, steel post right there. Then we'll be able to determine that site. There's some wooden stakes there, and I know the building from the survey itself was encroached, not the storage building in back of the antique center was encroaching a little bit, 6 inches or so. So, but we needed that front point so we could put some other stakes down the line for our lawnmower guy. Short-term rentals, according to the Planning and Zoning News, Wyckoff, he's dedicated the last two issues to short-term rentals and complete update on them and the court cases and what people are trying to do with them. He indicates that he feels that there will be activity at the state level during the when the reconvenes in the fall on these on the two pending legislation matters. And there's pros and cons on both sides. So fire department, you've heard from Pete. I haven't seen or heard anything on the status of our independent contract for field appraisal services, but I assume they're actively out doing the work. So that's all I have for today.
Thank you, Bill. Township Board announcements and correspondence. Like I just said, the tires are all gone. The Elk Rapids Township tax information is now on the website. If you go to www.elkrapids.com, click under Ask About Your Taxes, you go right to the BSNA software. Online, it tells you the assessments, it tells you the tax information, all about the property owner, and this is what some of those will contain, the picture of your house. That's also on there. That's what this assessment that Carlene is working on to get that, and they're updating that periodically. If you were to go look on your taxes, it is updated instantaneously as soon as it's posted in our office. It's posted on their website, so it'll show if they're paid or not. And that's all I have on that, but it's now on the website. And we are now trying to get a link to go back to the village taxes, because the village and our tax base are on the same tax package, but not on the same database because of their general ledger package versus ours. So we're working, I'm putting a link in there to go back and forth.
All right, I have a question.
Yes.
Not about that. So with our Grand Traverse Band grant that we received for $2,000 for the Historical Society, you were there to accept the grant.
Yes.
That was great. We've got it deposited, and I just want to try to make a trail for our auditors to show that we received it, we deposited it, and it goes to the Historical Society sheet. Flo did give us an invoice that says, yep, we've ordered our stuff for the kitchen. Can I just ask to make a motion to approve this $2,000 check from the grant to the Historical Society so that we've got what we may need for our auditors?
Sure.
As far as the trail? I mean, it's a given, but not when you're an auditor. So,
I so moved.
Could you make the motion to do that?
Okay. I'll second.
All right.
Okay.
All right, wait a minute then.
Well, you can second.
I got to sign the check.
Oh, okay. That's right. No. I'll second it.
That's okay.
Okay. So I'm going to make the motion to approve paying the Historical Society the $2,000 for the kitchen upgrades out of the grant.
Just let everybody know that that's no money out of tax dollars that was received from the Grand Traverse Band. It's just that they have to be sponsored by somebody in the township, sponsored them. I put it in the account, and now we're giving it back to them.
Yep.
More paperwork involved than what it's worth.
Okay.
Second.
So, thank you. And vote?
Yes.
Yes. And
roll call vote?
Yeah.
Just say, okay.
Yeah,
to the roll call.
Roll call vote, Szymanski?
Yes.
Boisvert, yes. And Holtz?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Thanks. Yeah, that's just a tying up of a...
paperwork.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have one more thing.
One more? Yes, Mr. Hall. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
We want to get you to at least 10:30. My major accomplishment of the month is that I found somebody to fix that.
All right. Hey.
Not a cheap process, by the way. $700 for Grand Traverse wall covering to come out, set up scaffolding, and work at 20 feet or 21 feet or whatever that is. And he will fix that and do the spot in here and the other side on the village side and check them while he's all set up so we don't have any of these things going on.
Thank you for that research.
That wasn't easy.
I won't know what to do when I can't look at that. Yeah, I told him that you would have to check it through the village, but to set it on the schedule.
Okay.
I don't think he'll be here for another month or so. And it will stay. I'll have to chase him.
All right.
He'll do it, but he's not going to just come running out here, if you know what I mean.
I'm sure he has bigger jobs to do than this. Are you all set?
That's all I have.
Shelley, anything?
I'm good.
Anybody else? With that, adjourn the meeting at 10:20. Perfect.